Your name is?
Fry, Daniel W. Fry.
And you have several books on the subject of the flying saucer situation.
I have written three books that deal to some extent with the subject, yes.
And what are the titles of these books?
The White Sands Incident, To Men of Earth, and the third is Steps to the Stars.
Now, what prompted you to become an author in this field?
I have never become an author in the usually accepted sense. The book, The White Sands Incident, was merely a report of something which occurred, something which happened to me at the White Sands Proving Grounds while I was stationed there to set up instrumentation for the testing of a static fired motor. And after some years of silence on this subject, I began to feel that perhaps the public was entitled to a report. So I made a report just as I would have written a report of an observation or a test. At that time, I had no intention whatever of publishing it. I thought it should be made available to anyone who was interested in it. A man who was a publisher approached me after it became known that this report had been written and asked permission to publish it. After some hesitation, I said, well, go ahead, this will relieve me of any further responsibility, because hereafter, if anyone questions me about this event, I can simply refer them to the report and let it go at that. It didn't exactly work out that way.
Yeah. It might be good at this juncture to tell what your business contact is.
I am the vice president of the Crescent Engineering Research Company in El Monte. We build guidance and control instruments for jet aircraft and guided missiles.
So one may take in reading your books that they are coming from a person who has a certain amount of authoritative information in the field of aerodynamics and is not likely to be misled or be given to wild speculation on the subject, but is more likely to report actual fact.
Well, I can only say that the instruments that I design and build work. They perform the function for which they're designed in the manner in which they are supposed to perform it. They have been reasonably successful. I have been employed in positions which require careful observation and factual and accurate reporting of those observations as they are made.
Now, what was the White Sands incident?
It was an event which occurred while I was stationed temporarily at the White Sands Proving Grounds, in which an oblate spheroid, a flattened sphere, apparently of metal, descended from somewhere over the peaks of the Oregon Mountains, which rise abruptly behind the base, at an angle of about 45 degrees, touched the earth at a point some 70 or more feet from the spot which I occupied, or the point where I stood at the time. I was then some three-quarters of a mile out from the base, hiking down one of the small roads in the area. I observed this object coming in. I observed it touch down. I observed that the brush upon which it landed was crushed quite flat to the earth. I knew that it would have required at least a matter of several tons force to have crushed this brush, and I knew, therefore, that this could not be a lighter-than-air craft.
Well, now, then this, of course, also the fact that the brush was crushed shows that this could not possibly have been any sort of mirage or other optical illusion.
Well, it created a physical, very definite physical effect, and left that effect behind it when it had gone. It was approximately 30 feet in diameter and about 16 feet in height. It was silver in color, and I say silver advisedly to distinguish from the hard, bright finish of stainless steel, nickel, or chrome. It could have been silver, it could have been an alloy of silver and platinum, it could have been platinum, but I don't know. I've never found out what the alloy. I think probably it was a plating material, whatever it was.
Aside from the sighting of this craft, what else happened at White Sands?
Subsequent to the sighting of this, when I had to some extent recovered from the shock of observing something which couldn't possibly fly come in and settle gently to earth there, I finally worked up courage to approach the thing, circled around it. I saw no portholes, no evidence of ingress or egress, of means of ingress or egress. It was completely silent at the moment. It was motionless. There were no propeller blades, there were no jet streams, there was no outward evidence whatever of the application of force which might propel it. After walking around it, I paused to consider what I should do next. The obvious answer, of course, was to rush madly back to the base and rouse a few other people and get them to come out and see the thing for themselves. The only thing that prevented me from doing it was the feeling that it might quite likely be gone when I returned, and I knew that this would be the end of my work in rocketry if it happened. After deciding that the only logical thing to do was to remain in the vicinity at least for a time and learn what I could and hope that I survived to make a report, I decided that the only thing I apparently could do, which I had not done yet, is to actually touch the material. I stepped forward and very gingerly applied one fingertip to the surface of the metal. It was only slightly above air temperature, but it had a quality that is difficult to describe. It was exceedingly smooth. It was more than that. It was exceedingly slippery. In fact, it was impossible to produce any friction between the tip of my finger and the surface of the metal. The metal was hard, that is, it did not indent under the pressure of the finger, but the finger simply drifted around on the surface. This was one of a number of subsequent things which occurred, which couldn't possibly occur in our thinking today, and left me in a state of wonderment. I then began to stroke the surface with the palm of my hand, and at that point I was addressed by a voice. Upon recovering from my surprise, I assumed that it was a voice which was being reproduced by some sort of transducer from within the craft, but the voice was in the English language and in the American idiom. The only thing that distinguished this voice or its usage from the American language is the fact that the idiomatic phrases in many cases were not used in the exact way that we would use them. They always made complete intelligence, but they were interspersed in places that we would never put them.
Now, did you have any other contact with the being in this craft other than the voice, or did you subsequently meet the beings?
No, I have never, to the best of my knowledge and belief, I have never met any individual who is or purports to be from any planet other than this Earth. That is, I have never met any of them who purported to be, who had any degree of evidence to support this statement.
Thank you very much, sir.